Today, what's going to happen to the markets and what should Australia do? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Jim Rogers, entrepreneur, author, and of course, founder of the Quantum Fund back in the 1970s. Jim, it's great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Well, Martin, I'm delighted to be here. I'm a fan of Australia, so let's do it.
Appreciate it. Now, you've got a really interesting perspective because, of course, you've been in the stock markets and around the stock markets for quite some time. And I guess I'd like to start by saying, what do you think is happening? You know, the markets seem to be running quite high, although they've come back a little bit today. But are they really connected to any fundamentals at the moment?
Well, what's happening, Martin, as you well know, is central banks and governments around the world are printing and borrowing and spending huge amounts of money. That's a fundamental. It's not a good fundamental necessarily, but that's what's happening. And that when somebody is pouring a lot of money into a market, of course it responds. I mean, Martin, you give me a few trillion dollars, I'll show you a very good time. We'll have a wonderful time. Of course, the problem is that somebody's got to pay all this back someday, and that's going to be a hangover. It's good to be old, Martin. It's not good to be young, not in America, not in Australia, not in Japan, not in much of the world now, because these guys are just going nuts and leaving a horrible legacy for somebody.
Right. And of course, it's public debt. I know that the federal banks, the feds around the world and the Reserve Bank here, they're all printing, they're all, you know, creating more liquidity in the market. We've also got big private debt as well. And of course, corporations have been also on the debt binge as well. So wherever you look, it's wall-to-wall debt.
More and more debt, more and more easy money, more and more free money. It's wonderful. It's wonderful at the moment, and the markets love it. But I want to remind you, I've been around long enough to know, and as you pointed out, I know this comes to an end.
Right. And how do you think it will come to an end, and when do you think the end might be?
Martin, you should watch Digital Finance Analytics if you want to know answers to questions like that. What do I know? You know, I'm trying to learn myself. We have an election in America in a couple of weeks. Everybody's been, in America anyway, has been trying to keep everybody happy so that they can win the election, both Democrats and Republicans. Certainly after that election, historically, if Mr. Trump wins, the market is more likely to stay higher for a while. If the opposition wins, normally what happens is the opposition comes in, cleans out everything they want to clean out, take the pain now so that they can get reelected next time around. So theoretically, if Mr. Biden wins, it won't be as good as if Mr. Trump wins. Maybe that's what the market has been telling us recently, that Mr. Biden's going to win. And if Mr. Biden wins, as I say, history would indicate it will not be great for the markets for a while.
Right. And I guess that also then begs another question, because you've linked it clearly to the election. What about the virus and, you know, the pandemic implications? Because a lot of people have been blaming the pandemic for pretty much all of the market ructions. But in fact, there were signs before the virus came on the scene that this game was already up.
By the end of last year, the beginning of this year, you're exactly right. There were already signs that problems were developing. Then along came the virus and knocked everything down. So all these guys turned around, turned on their printing presses, and ran things up for a while. You're exactly right, Martin. By the end of 2019, the American market had been going up for over 10 years. It was already the longest in American history. I mean, it didn't have to stop just because of that. It could have gone on 50 years. But always in the past, after it goes on for, has gone on for a long time, it comes to an end for whatever reason, and it was coming to an end. You know the rest of the story. Give me lots of money and I'll show you a good time.
Right. And I guess that means, though, that if you take a longer term perspective, you could argue that the money printing started, you know, from the previous financial crisis a decade plus ago. And in fact, they've been at it for a really, really long time without necessarily getting the effect that they expected, because inflation's been very low. We've put more and more money into the system. They keep doing the same thing. Is it going to be different ahead, or are we just going to see more of the same, do you think?
Extremely good insight. I see you have been watching digital finance analytics. You know, you understand a bit of what's going on. Yes, in 2008, America started printing huge amounts of money, and the other countries followed along. Everybody drove interest rates artificially to the lowest in recorded history. Interest rates had never been this low in history in the world, even went negative in some places. Long came the virus and they printed even more. So no, this has been going on for a while. There's no question about that. You know, in 2008, we had a big problem, Martin, because of too much debt. My goodness, since 2008, the debt has gone up by huge amounts of money since then, and the amount of money that's been printed since 2008 has been huge. And then, of course, 2020, just more gasoline on the fire, more, what do you call it in Australia, more petrol on the fire.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, looking ahead, we've talked about the potential for potentially the markets to come back at some point. There's a big debate going on around the place as to whether the future ultimately is going to be inflationary. In other words, whether all this money printing ultimately will mean that all assets, including financial assets, continue to rise, or whether we will move into a deflationary mode as interest rates come down, as debt is repaid. Have you got a perspective in terms of whether the future is likely to be inflationary or deflationary?
I certainly do. Who knows if I'm right or not, but I do know that right now the demand for many things is down a lot. So obviously prices are down. Not many people are driving or flying or doing much of anything else to use petrol. So the price of petrol is down. And that applies to many, many other things. People just aren't, go to an airport. You'll see that airfares are down a lot, et cetera. That's because the demand is down a lot. But historically, Martin, when you print huge amounts of money, eventually that feeds into higher prices and inflation. I mean, it always has. Maybe it's not going to this time. I'm skeptical. I've been around long enough and I've read enough to know that this kind of action always eventually leads to higher prices.
Okay, so you're on the inflation side of the argument eventually, right? It sounds as though there's a bit of time to work through, but effectively it will ultimately lead to higher inflation.
Yeah, demand for everything is down. After you have inflation or to have higher prices, you have to have supply and demand. And it's a two-part proposition, and there are not many things where demand is up now.
So one of the things that have been debated quite widely is whether, in fact, this whole cycle of money printing and central bank manipulation and intervention has really come to the end of its useful life, and whether we should be looking for a different model. You know, some people are referring to the Davos, reset, or the IMF talking about another Bretton Woods. Do you think we've got to the point where, in fact, we need to reset and rethink the way that this system works?
Well, I do know that whenever we've had gigantic problems, it's led to, you call it a reset, call it whatever you will, changes in the world. And at the moment, I mean, the United States is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, Martin. Never has anybody been this deep in debt, and we're going deeper and deeper into debt every week. This has always led to problems, a crisis or a semi-crisis, just that fact alone, but everybody is doing it now. So yes, I know that this is going to lead to big changes. At the moment, I own a lot of U.S. dollars. Now, you're probably going to say, well, why do you own U.S. dollars? I own them because when turmoil comes, people look for a safe haven. The U.S. dollar is not a safe haven. The largest debtor in the history of the world, but people think it is for historic reasons. So it will probably go much higher during the coming turmoil, get overpriced, might even turn into a bubble, at which point I hope I'm smart enough to sell it, because that will be coming to the end. America's been the leading currency for decades. We've had many major currencies, currencies, reserve currencies in history. None of them have survived. They've all disappeared eventually. The United States has had a long run, huge debts, many overextended in many ways. So I would suspect that it's coming to, our time is coming to an end. You probably know that some countries, China, Russia, Iran, India, Brazil, are working on trying to find a competing currency, something to compete with the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. has abused its privilege. I mean, the U.S., if they get angry at you, they cut you off. That's it. You cannot use the dollar anymore. Well, that's not what a reserve currency is supposed to be. Reserve country is supposed to be neutral. A reserve currency is supposed to be neutral. The U.S. doesn't play by those rules anymore, so the world is already looking for something to compete with the dollar for political reasons, but there are economic reasons too.
Right. And of course, there are debates about whether that might be gold or whether it might be the yuan or whether it might be some sort of digital currency. It's, if I get the sense that nobody quite knows where it's going to end up.
Well, the renminbi is certainly a possibility. I own some renminbi, not a lot. It's not a convertible currency. So the idea that the renminbi could suddenly become the world's reserve currency is laughable. And I own it. Don't think I don't understand. But maybe they are opening it up, and they've been opening up for a few years. Too slowly, in my view. So unless they really go all the way pretty quickly, I don't see how the renminbi can do it yet. Maybe gold. I mean, I own some gold. You know, everybody should have some gold in their pocket or in their closet or somewhere, and silver. Silver is cheaper at the moment than gold on a historic basis. Will it be gold and silver? I doubt it. People have tried gold and silver at times in the past. It's worked for a while, but it's never worked for the long term. So I don't know. We're all looking for the answer to the question which you rightly ask. When I sell my U.S. dollars, when they get overpriced in the next turmoil, what will I do? I don't know. I'll turn on digital finance analytics and find out.
Well, I might have some ideas, I'm not sure. Now, turning to Australia, and particularly Australia's relationship with Asia, you know, it's the Asian century, and Australia has been very reliant on China for a lot of its trade. You've got an interesting perspective in terms of what Australia and Australians should be doing vis-a-vis Asia.
Well, yeah, Martin, but I hasten to tell you, I'm not Australian, so I cannot tell you what to do. I have ideas and suggestions. I know where you are. I know your history. I know you have huge assets. But I know there are only, you know, there are fewer than 30 million of you. So it's not as though you got this gigantic military potential out there. If I were Australia, I'd be making friends in Asia. I would not want to be in a war against China, with China and Russia on one side, against anybody on the other side. And if I were Australia, I'd try to be the Switzerland kind of situation if and when war is coming. I mean, it feels like, yes, there will be war sometime in the next decade or two. Doesn't feel good. But you look back at the 30s and this sort of thing happened. You look at other eras, this sort of thing has happened. Insanity, total insanity. Nobody should be going to war with anybody. We should all be trying to be friends and get more prosperous together. But Martin, people have been trying for centuries to end wars. It's not going to happen.
No, unfortunately, I think you're right. And there are some worrying parallels, as you say, between the 30s and now. And indeed, even some of the political voices and political dynamics are mirroring some of the themes that were there back then as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And we can go back. And the problem is, Martin, the lesson of history is nobody learns the lessons of history. You and I can learn the lessons of history, but so what? If nobody else learns the lessons of history, then nobody learns the lessons of history. History is very clear that trade wars are no good. Nobody wins trade wars. Everybody suffers in a trade war. You and I know that. But in Washington, for instance, first of all, if they know history, they don't care because they think they're smarter than history. Mr. Trump knows he's smarter than history. He knows that he can win trade wars. He knows that he can do just about anything he wants with the world. Well, history shows that maybe that's not correct.
I guess time will tell, but it is an uncertain time. And I guess that uncertainty then takes us to a slightly different conversation, which, you know, individual investors are trying to figure out what they should do. You know, they might have a few stocks and shares around there, or they might have other assets. How should people navigate this really massively uncertain time?
Well, Martin, everybody wants a hot tip. Everybody wants to be rich this week. My first advice is, please don't listen to hot tips. Don't listen to some guy on the internet or the TV or in the newspaper. Stay with what you know. It's boring, but nobody wants to hear it, Martin. Everybody wants a hot, just give me one hot tip, just one. But that's total insane. If I told you that you could only have 20 investments in your life, you'd be very careful about your investments. You would invest only in things that you yourself know a lot about, and you'd probably become a successful investor. Boring, 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 but you'd be successful and rich. Nobody wants, then my answer is, Martin, everybody watching this knows a lot about something, whether it's cars or fashion or something. Stay with what you know. And when you see a major change taking place that you know is going to be successful, do your homework, do your research, and invest. And then call me. Send me an email so I can look at it too at that point. But that's how you get successful. Now, I can tell you what I'm doing. I've been buying Japanese ETFs because the Bank of Japan is buying Japanese ETFs. They have more money than I do. I've been buying Russian shipping companies because Russia's hated and they're very cheap. I've been buying Chinese wine companies. You probably don't even know there are Chinese wine companies. But no, people stop going to the restaurants and to the bars. I presume people will go to the restaurants and the bars again, and someday, you know, you'll have a program on digital finance analytics, and you'll talk about Chinese wine companies, and everybody will say, wow, and I will say, yes, 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 you can buy my Chinese wine companies if you want to. So these are things that are smashed, beaten down, tourism, travel, many things are beaten down. Agriculture has been a disaster for years. It's changing. So there are places where one can invest and make money, but don't do it. If you don't know their Chinese wine companies, for goodness sakes, don't go out and buy Chinese wine companies because you heard some guy on the internet.
No, fair comment. And there are, unfortunately, a lot of people out there spruiking a silver bullet answer to this problem. I'm much more skeptical, I'm afraid. And, you know, I tend to be on your side of the argument to say, understand, analyze, watch carefully, look for those mispriced assets rather than piling in and following everybody else. Because one of the observations I've got is a lot of the money that's gone into the markets recently are just piling in naively, riding it up, and that's unfortunately going to end in tears at some point. So you have to do the work. You have to actually really understand what you're looking at rather than just go with the crowd.
Well, Martin, I'm delighted to hear you say it. You are boring. You are poor. You're like me, you know. But I guess that comes from enough experience and enough knowledge about what happens that this gets bad in the end. I have seen manias and bubbles before. It's starting to happen in some parts of the market. You just pointed out, certainly in some of the U.S. stocks and Chinese stocks, Tencent. You know, Alibaba, things like that. There's a new issue coming in China now. It's gigantic demand for. I'm sure most people cannot tell you anything about it, but that doesn't mean they're not trying to buy the stock. Oh, we've all seen this before. We know how it ends. Just be very careful is all I suggest.
Yeah, thank you. Good advice. And just to close out this conversation, you actually made some really important observations for your kids in terms of some principles around which they should think about their finances. It would be good just to recap some of those because I think they're really important.
Well, I learned at a very early age, you better save money because it doesn't fall out of the sky. When my children were born, I got them both piggy banks, six piggy banks. And so that I wanted them to know that when you get money, it's supposed to be saved, not spent. You know, many kids get a dollar in their pocket and they go down to the store and spend it. I've tried to teach my girls that when you get money, you go put it in the bank and you save it. And when you get enough, you go down to the big bank and you get interest on your money. And I get, you ask why six piggy banks? I'm not trying to teach them to be currency speculators, but I wanted them to learn every kind of money should be saved, whatever it is. So that was one of the very first things that I tried to teach him. My daughter, older daughter, when she turned 14, I told her she had to get a job. I mean, obviously, she didn't have to work, but I told her you got to get a job. I thought she would go to McDonald's and you know, make $8 an hour. She's a lot smarter than I am, Martin. She went and got a job teaching Mandarin. She makes $30 an hour. And she complains because the grown-ups make $70 an hour. She thinks she should be making $70 an hour too. So I hope I'm teaching that money should be saved, not spent, invested, not spent, and everybody should work because it's not going to be easy.
Right. And you know, the idea of saving, some will say, is a bit old-fashioned. But again, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but for me, and maybe I was brought up, you know, in a banker's family, so we're always conscious of the value of money. Savings for me is just, you know, second nature. But a lot of people I come across in my surveys and I speak have no concept of the need to save at all. And I think that's probably one of those really critical stand back and think moments. You know, it really is important to save because for uncertainty and to give you some flexibility.
Well, Martin, as you know, I've driven around the world a couple of times, and I have you have a show, Walk the World. You can walk the world, you can see the world, and you will see that the people who've saved and invested have built careers, good lives, and even good societies for the countries that do that. I mean, again, this is another lesson of history. You go back and you see many families break up, marriages break up, lives break up because people don't handle money properly. I don't like seeing it, but I've certainly seen it enough with my friends and acquaintances. So I'm trying, I hope you ask, I hope that my girls know that they better not go deep into debt unless they know what they're doing. There's nothing wrong with debt, Martin. Some great fortunes have been made using debt. But many, many more disasters and lives have been ruined by debt, by people who didn't understand debt and didn't use money and debt properly. So, sure, just learn the basics and then have at it.
Well, Jim, I appreciate your time today. And in fact, there's a seminar tomorrow, Wednesday, the 28th of October, where you'll be talking about this stuff in a bit more detail. So we'll put the links below if people want to go and look at that free seminar, because I think these insights in the current environment are absolutely critical. So many people seem a bit lost to know what to do, and they're getting sort of swept up with all of these silver bullet solutions that are out there. Some real common sense from you. It has been absolutely brilliant. So thank you very much for spending some
Well,
time with
thank
us.
you, but Martin, I made many mistakes in my life. You want to hear about my first wife? Oh, what a mistake that was. So don't worry, I make plenty of mistakes.
No, well, that's actually interesting because I think you, if you learn from mistakes, they can actually help to lay a better foundation for the future. The difficulty
Fabulous.
is making the same mistake again and again and again and not learning from it, like central bankers are doing.
Like Washington, D.C. is doing.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and take care. Thank you.
My pleasure, Martin. Hope we do it again sometime.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.